interviews, famous politicians and personalities. This program is broadcast every Sunday by IRIB English Radio.
Now joining me from Tehran is American journalist, filmmaker and host for Press TV, my wonderful colleague, Marcy Hashemi. Thank you so much for coming on the program. It's really great to have you, Marcy.
Hi, Richard. It's my pleasure to be with you. And you're doing a great job, by the way.
So I wanted to start out with this outrageous assault on the press from the other day when the United States took down Press TV's website and a bunch of other outlets as well. You know, I just wanted to ask you, first of all, what was going through your head? Like, what was your initial reaction? All this work, all these efforts that you and all our other colleagues have made just suddenly vanished and deleted off the internet.
Well, you know, Richard, unfortunately, I really wasn't surprised because we have seen so many assaults by various Western governments against Press TV. We have seen years ago, of course, in the early days of Press TV, we saw the satellites, the various satellites not allowing Press TV to be broadcast from them. We have seen, of course, like in the United States, we're never allowed on cable television. And in more recent years, we have seen the continual attacks on our social media, YouTube being blocked, so many different attacks. But this time around, perhaps I'm a little surprised, if I want to say anything, that it says how effective that we have been, how threatened they are by us, that they would actually seize the website. I mean, you know, Richard, before the U.S. was a little bit smoother with its censorship, with how it controls scenarios, but now we're just seeing outright attacks, and they're not even trying to hide their animosity and disdain anymore. And let me say, and lack of fair play and lack of believing in free speech and freedom of the press.
Yeah, I absolutely share your sentiment. And, you know, this is not the first time, obviously, that they've gone after Press TV. It's not just the website, it's also the social media pages. And I think you yourself have also been subjected to extremely cruel, inhumane treatment from the U.S. government. Could you maybe give the viewers an idea how far back this goes and why, even though we're angry, we're not surprised?
Right, yes, of course, I have had my own experience two years ago, of course, being arrested in the U.S. And, you know, it's really interesting because after they arrested me and were asking questions about Press TV, it was mind-boggling for me as an American citizen in the United States, in the capital of the U.S., in Washington, D.C., that what was most important for them was why Press TV covered Israel in the way that it does. Asking several questions about basically why we don't show what they call the real perspective about Israel, why do we have negative coverage when it comes to Israel. What I found mind-boggling about that is that they asked me more questions about Press TV's coverage of Israel than Press TV's coverage of the United States, and I think that that says a lot. It's unfortunately the whole Zionist-controlled media right now in the U.S., and I would say Zionist-controlled government. And this is a big part of what is going on with us right now, let me say, because I really feel that the role that we've just played and other entities that have been seized by the United States, the role that was played in the most recent 11-day onslaught by the Israelis on the Gaza Strip, again, providing that alternative perspective. And of course, with social media now, you know, we had people, regular people in Sheikh Jarrah, in Gaza, at Al-Aqsa, and sending those videos and uploading it to social media. So then they no longer can control the narrative. And that's very difficult for them because they never play fairly. They at least they'll try to have that monopoly on it. And when they no longer can monopolize the narrative, That's when the situation will get really sticky and they will really play dirty, as we have seen with the seizure of our website and others. Well, of course, it was not the first time. It won't be the last time, but I think it says a lot. And I think really we actually all should sort of be proud that perhaps we're more effective than even we imagine ourselves, because, of course, we have lots of limitations because of the overall situation and being sanctioned. But at the same time, that they felt it was necessary to siege the website, I think that says a lot about how effective we have been. As I said earlier, it's not the first time, and I don't think that it will be the last time. And they will continually try to silence this resistance camp, because actually we're showing an alternative perspective, the real perspective, with so many stories that before they had a monopoly on the narrative. So this is very difficult for them that they no longer have that monopoly. We have seen throughout the years various ways that the mainstream media tried to deal with that alternative perspective. And we have seen even, of course, unfortunately, sometimes them creating their own stories, their own scenarios, whether we're talking about in Iraq, 2003 leading up to that invasion by the U.S., or we're talking about even something like Douma, Syria, and we saw the whole thing that they created news. So, yeah, this is nothing new, and it's not going to stop, I'm sure.
Why do you think they decided to do this now? I've heard people speculate that perhaps this was in part due to the recent shift in public opinion in favor of Palestine, specifically after this onslaught against Gaza that we just saw in May. And of course, Press TV played a huge role in actually reporting about that accurately and truthfully. Do you think this shift in public opinion on the Israelis maybe played a small role? Because at the same time, as you mentioned, it does go a long way back. I also wanted to ask you, and I know this is kind of a rhetorical question, but are you surprised by the silence in the mainstream media, even in independent media, right? There are a lot of these so-called lefties who've said nothing at all.
Yeah, that's, you know, the unfortunate situation that we face, Richard, isn't it? That the so-called liberals definitely totally silent. When it comes to neoliberalism, I mean, because that's the real thing that we're talking about, really, and serving the 1%, right? When it comes to that, unfortunately, we don't see much of a difference between what is called the mainstream media and the so-called liberal media, because as we know, for example, we're talking about the United States, it really doesn't matter if there is an administration that is Democratic or Republican. Basically, they're serving the same elite and the 1%, and that's what we're looking at. On the one hand, they want to call themselves liberal and open and woke. On the other hand, they remain silent when this obvious attack on liberties. The country that, so, you know, really always talks about freedom of speech and freedom of the press, and attacks so many countries for saying that they don't have it. We see what they have done and what they're doing, and it is absolutely amazing, the silence that we're seeing coming from the mainstream media and the so-called liberal media. But again, unfortunately, we're not surprised, because it's definitely not the first time that we've seen this.
We didn't only see Press TV being taken down. We also saw Al Furat, Al Masira. We saw 33 channels in total, all of them not just Iranian, some Yemeni, you know, Iraqi. So, I mean, what do these outlets have in common, though? Why were they targeted all together at once? What's the takeaway here?
Well, I think, what they have in common, that they basically, it's anti-hegemonic policies. We are seeing a full-force attack on the resistance front. And that's obvious, because the resistance front has been effective. I think that we are seeing the United States and their Western allies, and even perhaps regional, some of their regional allies, reeling from losses. I mean, whether we're talking about, for example, the Daesh project was a major project, and it failed for the most part in Syria and in Iraq. And why did it fail? Because of resistance. And the media connected with, for example, resistance, whether we're talking about in Iraq or whether we're talking about in Syria, whether we're talking about in Palestine or Yemen or the Islamic Republic of Iran, standing up against these hegemonic and demonic policies that they have tried to implement. So again, wanting to control the narrative and no longer being able to do that. We look at what is going on in Yemen, the amount of the type of weapons and equipment that have been sold to Saudi Arabia by the United States, by the UK, and of course their support for the Saudi regime in their onslaught on the Yemeni people. And yet we have seen unbelievable advances on the ground by freedom fighters, the Yemeni people. And of course, being that the media connected with that, trying to show the reality, again, they don't want the other side, the reality of that narrative to be shown. As I said, you know, we've seen this a lot. We have seen this a lot, and this is why we're going to continue to see the attacks that we have, and at the same time, we're going to continue doing what we do.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. It's horrific what's happening in Yemen. And, you know, just to wrap up, Marcy, I see the United States just yesterday complaining that media outlets have been censored in Hong Kong, and they point the finger at China and Russia and Iran and a host of other countries, calling them authoritarian. But, I mean, what they've done now, the U.S. just taking down the websites, shutting down 33 foreign news outlets, I mean, is that not clearly an attack on the press? I don't think I could ever listen. I already couldn't ever listen again to another Western country lecturing about press freedoms. Can you? Can anyone?
Yeah, well, you know, I haven't been able to for a long time, Richard. My experience with the Western press goes way back. Of course, I was an American-educated journalist, universities in the United States. I've learned early about the techniques that they use, but let me just say, there's been a major deterioration in the United States dealing with the press. At one time, we really did have more of an independent press. I mean, we can look at history and see, for example, during the Vietnam War, one of the main catalysts for people taking to the streets in mass demonstrations and protests were the body bags, the number of body bags, coffins, that were coming back to the United States, the number of American soldiers who had been killed. And we know that, for example, in 2003, with the start of the U.S. Invasion of Iraq, that they made it illegal for journalists to take photographs, to take pictures or videos and show the body bags. So I think we're seeing a very, very different reality on the ground of journalists now, journalism now there. Post-2001 is a totally different world in the world of journalism in the West. And unfortunately, it has gotten so authoritarian as far as the government itself, and it's trying to control alternative narratives. So yes, we have seen definite deterioration, and yeah, it's like the pot calling the kettle black. So, you know, they're pointing the finger at Hong Kong or China or Iran, and really it is unbelievable the techniques that they are using to control the narrative. And I ask anyone, I mean, if it was something that, for example, the opposite had happened, like in China or in Iran, that they had totally sieged a foreign website, and what would be the reaction? So, yes, we're continually seeing this hypocrisy coming out of Washington and coming from the mainstream media. But as I said earlier, we will continue doing what we do and hopefully being the voice of the voiceless.
We constantly hear Britain and America and their allies whining and complaining about China, about Russia, about Iran, accusing them of being authoritarian and attacking the press. Every day, some Western reporter thinks they're very tough for yelling Navalny's name at Russian President Putin. But of course, not a word about Julian Assange, the founder of WikiLeaks, journalist whose extradition hearing I covered. They say nothing about Assange, who Trump and now Biden are trying to extradite to the U.S., threatening him with 175 years in jail as he's locked in a maximum security prison in London. Just imagine for a second if Iran had gone and permanently seized the websites of Western outlets like the BBC or CNN. Just imagine the outrage that would ensue. So where is the outrage now when the United States shuts down 33 foreign news sites? Where is the outrage at this violent behavior, this criminal attack against the press? How do people just let the U.S. get away with this outrageous behavior, purposely going and silencing adversarial outlets that are not even inside the U.S.? Of course, the media says nothing. Of course, and even many in the so-called American left, in independent media, will say nothing because they're afraid to defend Arabic, Persian, and Muslim outlets, or what Israeli media laughably calls pro-Hamas outlets, as if that's all they are. These so-called leftists and defenders of free speech have vanished. They have nothing to say all of a sudden about Biden using emergency laws to shut down foreign media outlets like some dictator. When it comes to imperialism, you really get to see their true colors. You really get to see where they stand. What the U.S. has done here against Press TV and other outlets is outrageous and despicable. It's an attack on the press. It's an attack on foreign journalists. Let's be unequivocal about that. This is an extraterritorialization of U.S. law and authoritarianism. But you know, at the very least, it shows, it proves that our work is effective and important, and that they are afraid of us because we speak the truth. And if they want to come and call journalists a, quote, unusual and extraordinary threat because we stand up for Palestinians and we expose the true nature of America's foreign policy, then we'll take that as a badge of honor. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Answering your doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
الله هو ذا الرحمن الله هو ذا المنان.
لا إله إلا.
Please send us your emails to our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
In the name of Allah, the All Beneficent, the All Merciful, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon all of His messengers, and especially the last of them, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his progeny, and all of those companions of theirs who truly follow their path. Dear listeners, assalamu alaikum, and welcome to another program of questions and answers on Islamic beliefs. You're listening IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Sayyid Ayman Rizvi, and today, fortunately, we have a guest scholar with us today, Mr. Mohsen Naqvi. Assalamu alaikum, Mr. Naqvi.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah.
We welcome you to our studios. The norm of this program is to answer important questions related to our Islamic beliefs through a fruitful and healthy discussion. So, without any further delay, let's move on to today's topic. Today, many scholars and people have problems with the construction of the shrine of the imams. They usually say that, why did they build such a luxurious shrine for the imam, who was a symbol of simplicity? What's your take on that?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. When such a shrines are made for the imams, generally it is in order to show the love and affection that people have towards that personality. That's the first thing. The second point is, which is important, and that is making such shrines is very important. Why? Because, you know, the enemies of Islam, the enemies of Ahlul Bayt, they think that because they have destroyed, maybe they have killed these infallible imams, people will not come after them. And by making such shrines, people are showing that, look, we love them in a way that we are making this luxurious, you know, as they said, luxurious. It's not a luxurious thing, you know. Generally, it was the kings, for example, who have gifted some things, and it is over there generally. When you look at the shrines itself, it only have, you know, glasswork, and it's marbled. The floors are marbled and all those things. Why and how is this happening? It's not happening because a government is sponsoring it. It's because of the funds that are given, the money, the gifts in a monetary term that are given. And they're used in such a way.
By general public.
It's all general public. It's not a government. I said it's not by the government.
Of course.
For example, I remember when there was a bomb attack on the shrine of the Imam Hassan Askari in Samarra, and the tomb was destroyed, and it was made of gold. That there was a gold.
Yes.
They said in Iran they said we're gonna make it, and within half an hour, the whole gold was collected. People came with their ladies. They came with their bangles of gold, necklaces, and all those, and they all gifted to the shrine. In half an hour.
Also, they brought their just usual jewelry.
Yeah, the usual jewelry which they were using. Mm-hmm. They just took off their jewelry, and they gifted to the imam. They gifted it to the imam, to the shrine of the imam, so that the managers can build a new tomb for the imam. So this is the affection. This is the love which people generally have, and this shows that they are giving it for the imam basically.
Mm.
And not for anything else.
Exactly.
Yeah. So this is something natural. When you love someone, you love to give everything that you have to that person.
Mm-hmm.
And this is how we can have it.
This is the intellectual reason.
This is one of
you
the
love
things.
Someone, you just...
On the other hand, when the people, they come and visit the shrines of the imam, and they see the big shrines. For example, the shrine of Imam Rada alayhi salam. How big is it?
Yeah.
And in the nights of Qadr, in the special days, it's all packed.
Mm.
And even people are outside on the road. Yeah. What does it show? It shows that these many people do visit this pilgrimage.
Yes.
The Kaaba, they made double story for walking. They're expanding the place of Kaaba. Why? Because there are more pilgrims who are visiting that place. If the Masjid al-Nabi, the mosque of the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam in Medina, is being expanded, it's because there are many people who are visiting.
Mm.
So you need to basically provide a comfortable place for them as well. This is the duty as well.
Sure.
That those who are the managers or responsible or key holders of the haram or the shrines of the imam, when a visitor is coming, a za'ir is coming, a pilgrimer. And in the narrations, we have the narrations which is talking about the ranks of these pilgrimers, the status of them. It is a very high status for these pilgrimers who are coming and visiting. So who has to look after them? Who has to, make this shrine in a way so that everyone can come easily visit the place, and then they're in a comfortable, they come in a comfortable place. They do not feel, awkward when they're visiting such a place. So it's the duty of the managers. And from where they're doing it by the funds of the people, general public. The general public has funded them. It's not a government, it's not a specific, organization who is doing that. No, it's the general public who is giving the funds. And they're using it in the true means, in the true senses. Not only this, but also these funds are used in different ways as well. For example, I can tell you about the shrine of Imam Rada alayhi salam. That the manager of the shrine, the funds that were given to the holy shrine, generally the people come and they give some funds. With those funds, they have made over 100 factories, which includes the dairy farms, which includes the factories that build buses. In today, the buses that are, the local buses that is moving inside the city, intercity buses, are made of the factory of Imam Rada alayhi salam. Mm-hmm. Al-Quds or the Quds.
I've heard many times they say that the mausoleum of Imam Rada alayhi salam is a lender, and the people, the government is basically a creditor.
Is a creditor, yes. that's the case as well.
Yeah.
That's the case as well. So basically that fund which is coming, it's not just being used for expanding the zari or the haram itself, like the shrine itself, but it is used in a good way. And with that money, they're helping the poor people of the city of, for example, Mashhad, or even the way you said, the government is the, we can say, like
creditor. They're taking money.
It's a borrower. It's a creditor or the borrower of the shrine of Imam Rida alayhi salam. So basically, even the shrine of Imam Ali, shrine of Imam Hussein, it's been expanded. The other places are expanding. This is very necessary. This is necessary. You know, if we leave, I don't understand those who talk against it. Why? Because they want it to be, you know, congested area the way it was before, a single room, and people could hardly go inside there. Some might die because of, you know, the congestion of the area. So we need an expanded area, and these expansion must be done because of people who are visiting, because of you know, showing enemies the power of these imams and the, you know, the maqam and the status what they have in the eyes of people, and in order to show the love of Ahlul Bayt. This is all necessary.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Why these people who complain a lot, why don't they complain about the shopping malls, the huge, big shopping malls they are, you know, building all around the countries, you know, many places?
No, because generally the reason they bring, as you said in the question as well, that the imams were living a simple life. Yeah, the question was right, if imam were living a simple life and imam has ordered them to do such thing, whereas imam did not said them to make such a thing, but now it is necessary according to, you know, every day there are new developments. We are advancing in different things. Therefore, when the pilgrims are coming, they need a place which is air-conditioned in the summer, and it's quite warm in the winter. Obviously, it should be have accordance with the environment or the outer weather. And there must be a covered area if there is a rain, if there is a hot, you know, weather. There must be a covered area. So when there is a covered area and people are coming from alongside, instead of, you know, wasting their time going to the malls and other places, if you're making a shrine luxurious, yes, it attracts them, it makes them to sit more over there. At least it's an attractive point for them.
Sure.
You know, it's not just the luxurious, it shows the art of an artist who is going there and who is making those arts and, you know, doing that glasswork maybe, or the, you know, the artwork. You know, we have precious artworks in the shrines, and I think these people do not know, who complains about this luxurious, you know, shrines,
yeah,
that these people who worked there, who did the artwork over there, and the, you know, we have these handicrafts,
calligraphy or, you know,
we have this calligraphy and all those things, or the glass works that are there. The people who have done it, they have done it for free of cost.
Mm.
They don't know about this.
Yes.
That they showed their whole, you know, we can say like experience that they had, the mastering that they had in a specific field, they have put it over there in order to make, to bring the best of their work. They have just done their best of work over there free of cost, and it didn't even cost them. So basically, it depends on you. If there is an alim, there is a doctor who is the best doctor, what he can do for the shrine is he can go and serve in a clinic in the shrine to the general mu'mineen or the visitors who are coming.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If there is an alim, we can say a scholar, he can, you know, share his best of the knowledge. And that's what we see, for example, the Hawza of Najaf and Hawza of Karbala and the Hawza of Qom. It's generally the scholars, the most top, we can say, qualified scholars are coming, and they're teaching free,
guiding
of course,
people, providing, yes, services, answering questions.
Yes, they're providing services to them. If there is a person who is a good, you know, we can say like calligraph.
Calligrapher.
The calligrapher is bringing his best calligraphy in the shrine, and that's how he shows it. It is the love that they have basically shown. It's not someone is doing purposely all these things. It can be, but obviously behind it, there are many of the reasons which we need to, inshallah, see.
Just to sum up the conversation, you know, I would like to say that, you know, there are intellectual reasons. For example, whatever is more important for people should be given, you know, due importance. There is a religious reason. For example, Quran asks us to pay respect to the Prophet and his family. Then there is a jurisprudential, you know, reasons like nodur and mawqufat. People do the charity or donations, and it's all paid by people, as we talked about it. There is a cultural reason, like, you know, every intellectual, every, you know, society is careful in paying homage and respects those who are valued in their society for whatever reasons, right? And then scientifically, if we talk about, you know, these spiritual places provide, you know, many, you know, services, social impacts, such as, you know, we can have mosques, we can create like libraries, clinics, bookstores or study halls or whatever, and all of it, you know, for the sake of people and to create an environment which can be beneficial and fruitful for everyone in the society. Thank you very much, Brother Naqvi.
You're welcome.
And inshallah, till next episode, we will inshallah come back in the next episode with a new topic with you, for you. Till then, Khuda Hafiz. Fi Aman Allah.
Inna fi al-jannati nahran laban. Inna fi al-jannati nahran laban. Li Ali wa Husayni wa Hasan. لعلي وحسين وحسان إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسان لعلي وحسين وحسان حب أهل البيت فرض عندنا حب أهل البيت فرض عندنا وبهذا الحب لنا شميحا.
Join us in this journey, IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
I invite you to listen to a short part of the book Sirr al-Salat, The Secret of Prayer by Imam Khomeini. And the learned ones, he said, I worship him because I love him. And to the holy men is to decide to obey naturally after the vision of the beloved, independently and essentially and annihilated in lordship, essentially and attributably and actually. And due to the utterance of Imam Sadiq, I worship Allah for his love. Perhaps it is his ordinary stage, as our perfect Shaykh used to say. Such worshipping is merely their special ways, and in some cases, as there are some traditions of the messenger who said, I have some special relation that neither angels nor any messenger have had the same or have such capacity. And there is tradition of Imam Sadiq alayhi salam. One day he was performing prayer. He fell and became unconscious. He was asked the reason. He replied, I repeated that verse so many times when I heard it myself. The great Shaykh Shahabuddin said the tongue of Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq at that time was like Moses' tree, that through which Allah's words was heard.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. Today we are with another program of Spring of Truth from IRB English Radio, and I'm your host Sayyid Mohsin Naqvi with the viewpoints of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh. Imam Khomeini talks about a wrong selection, or if a person who does not care about the Islamic rules or laws. Imam Khomeini says the day perversion is witnessed in the majlis, which is the parliament, when perversions of power seeking and greed are observed in the president or the ministers, know that day marks our impending defeat. Perversions must be checked right then and there. This revolution, which was brought by the martyrs,
يا حي يا قيوم
يا حي يا قيوم
يا حي يا قيوم
يا حي يا قيوم
Those innocent people, those pure and noble people who fought for Islam, who gave their lives for Islam, who struggled for Islam, and they bear the 8-year war, which was with the rest of the world, the enemies, they want to bring some people who are inclined towards West, so that this Islamic revolution must be defeated. Therefore, we need to be very much careful when we are giving vote, when we are trying to elect a person, the person must be noble. The person must be inclined towards Islam. He must be submissive to the Islamic law by himself.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
This
for
is
a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم brothers and sisters you are listening to IRIB English Radio and here is Batul welcome to the program for a better life in a previous session we posed this question as to what is a better life then we came to the conclusion that a better life is when a person is happy now this happiness is not the material happiness but it is the happiness of the soul so how can I reach this happiness the answer is when I become a better person so how can I become a better person the ulama of akhlaq say that first I need to recognize the bad traits once I recognize them either I need to avoid these bad traits or to get rid of them now how will I do this the ulama use the terms daf'an and raf'an now what does that mean it means that if I do not possess these bad traits I should strive not to get tainted with them I should avoid them if I don't have them and let's say if I already possess them then I should fight to free myself from them to cleanse myself from them now to recognize the bad traits is just like recognizing the poison for a doctor the doctor will try to avoid it and teach others to avoid it and if God forbid others are affected by it he will teach them how to get rid of the poison now this is just like we are fighting with COVID nowadays brothers and sisters the doctors recognize it and take precautions against it then they teach us too to stay away from it how by wearing a mask sanitizing and washing our hands frequently those who have been affected they already have the COVID God forbid then they are quarantined they are given oxygen and medication to be treated and to get rid of this virus the ulama of akhlaq also use two more beautiful terms which I would like to discuss they are called takhliya and tahliya now what are these takhliya means to avoid the bad traits or to get rid of them and cleanse ourselves from them if our souls have been tainted by them tahliya that means to decorate our souls with the jewels of virtues so unless we achieve takhliya that means unless I cleanse myself we cannot acquire tahliya now let me use an example here if a dish is dirty and I pour clean milk in it it is going to get dirty and not remain pure anymore but when I clean the dish and then pour the milk the purity of the milk will reflect now let me take you a step ahead let us say that the dish was clean and then I poured some fresh milk in it the milk will be pure now if I add some dirt to this dish of milk what will happen the milk will get dirty too it will rot now let me get back to the two terms of akhlaq takhliya and tahliya Ayatollah Jawadi Amali says that takhliya and tahliya are two separate things. Regarding takhliya, he says that the jewels of virtues have roots in our being, whereas the bad traits is an additional trait. It does not belong to our soul. It has been added to it. The soul has been affected by this bad trait. But it has no roots in the soul.
Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
When a man is born, we say that he knows nothing. Quran says regarding this, وَاللَّهُ أَخْرَجَكُمْ مِنْ بُطُونِ أُمَّهَاتِكُمْ لَا تَعْلَمُونَ شَيْئًا. Allah has brought you forth from the bellies of your mothers while you did not know anything. But when the soul was created, it was created with the fitrate tawhidi. That means it knew its creator. Quran says in regards to it, فَأَقِمْ وَجْهَكَ لِلدِّينِ حَنِيفًا فِطْرَةَ اللَّهِ الَّتِي فَطَرَ النَّاسَ عَلَيْهَا. O mankind, set the face of your heart towards the upright religion of the divine unity. Allah has originally created the nature of man's soul with full tendency and love for the divine unity. So, brothers and sisters, when the soul was created, it had no bad traits, but it was created with the recognition of his Lord, the one and only God, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And when the soul was united with the body, it still had the fitrati tawhidi, the innate nature that was aware of the oneness of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It had this virtue. It was in the roots of its soul. But the bad traits were not there. Surah Shams mentions, وَنَفْسِيُ وَمَا سَوَّاهَا. And the soul and him who created it, who made it perfect. Now who is this him? Is Allah, who made the soul perfect. فَأَلْهَمَهَا فُجُورَهَا وَتَقْوَاهَا. Then he inspired it to understand what is right and wrong for it. قَدْ أَفْلَهَا مَنْ زَكَّاهَا. He will indeed be successful who purifies it. The one who purifies his soul will be successful. وَقَدْ قَابَ مَنْ دَسَّاهَا. And he will indeed fail who corrupts it. So let me put our discussion together, brothers and sisters. If we cleanse ourselves from the bad traits, those traits that have no roots in our soul, those traits that are just added to the soul, those traits that have given color to the soul, those traits that have dirtied the pure soul. Once these traits are washed away, then the true soul shall be manifested. When the curtains of dirt are lifted from the soul, it shall be seen. It will shine. It will bloom. That is the pure soul. That is the pure soul. Man can even polish the soul and make it shine better with more virtues added to it. And when these virtues are added to it, virtues of rightfulness, virtues of truth, virtues of gallantry, virtues of courage, then what will happen? This will lead the man to become a better person. And then this will in turn lead him to achieve a better life, inshallah. وَآخِرُ دَعْوَاهُمْ أَنِ الْحَمْدُ لِلَّهِ رَبِّ الْعَالَمِينَ. اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم.
You're mercy. Your love is all I need. 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 Oh,
your love is all I need. To be all I need. And I know that you will see how much you need.
Your love is all I need.
To be all I can be.
is all I need.
Rabbana, Rabbana.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
Rabbana, Rabbana, ya Rabbana, ya Rabbana, ya Hayyu, ya Qayyum, nawwir qalbana.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hussain Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today we're going to be examining prophethood and the necessity of prophethood. In some of our previous sessions, we said that one of the reasons why human beings need divine revelation and prophethood is that they need a divine law that would prevent society from falling into chaos. Today we're going to be examining the necessity of prophethood from another angle, and that's this: that human beings, obviously, they have a natural inclination towards their own felicity. Everybody wants to be happy, everybody wants to be felicitous, everybody wants to be successful. This success and this felicity, obviously, it stems from two things. We are of the opinion that it stems from and it emanates from two things: a knowledge of God, as well as a knowledge of that which is to his benefit, that which harms him in this life. Now, a perfect knowledge of these two matters, in other words, a perfect knowledge of God, a perfect knowledge of that which is to his benefit in this world and that which harms him in this world, this is not something that man can acquire on his own. Rather, he needs divine assistance. He needs the assistance of God in order for this perfect knowledge to be acquired. If man were left on his own, just like if man were left on his own to formulate laws, right, he wouldn't be able to form a perfect law that would perfect his society from falling into chaos and prevent oppression from occurring in this world. In the same way, if man were left on his own, he couldn't acquire a proper understanding and a perfect understanding of his Creator, which is necessary for him to be felicitous, as well as a proper understanding of his own self and that which is to his benefit and that which is to his which is to his detriment. One of the things that stands testament to this is the fact that when we look at the history of human knowledge, we see when left on their own, how many people, how many human beings have made mistakes, and how many of them have become misguided in the divine sciences and in their understanding of God. We see how many people have arrived at the conclusion that God doesn't exist. How many people have arrived at the conclusion that the knowledge of God or the understanding of God is not possible. Both atheists and agnostics, both of these groups, are testament to the fact that left on their own, human beings, they cannot acquire proper understanding of God. There are many human beings, many groups of human beings who believe that yes, God does exist, but, for example, there is more than one God. There's a multiplicity of God. Or some people believe that there's one God, but he has nothing to do with this world. After the creation of the world, he handed over the regulation of the world to other demigods. So we see that left on their own, when human beings are left on their own, we see that they become misguided in their knowledge and understanding of their Creator. For this reason, and this knowledge is the knowledge of their Creator, the knowledge of God, is a necessary requirement for the felicity of human beings and for them to achieve the felicity, their felicity in this world and in the hereafter. Therefore, God, it's the requirement that upon, it's necessary for God to send, to reveal to human beings the knowledge of himself and introduce himself to human beings. And this is something that can only occur through divine revelation. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at the necessity of the knowledge of God, its connection to divine revelation. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussain Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to English Radio at irib.ir.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars from IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the All-Beneficent, the All-Merciful. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. I'm Atta, the host of this program. This is Viewpoints. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, and we want to discuss another important topic regarding the speeches and the addresses of the Supreme Leader of Iran, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, Brother Ali Alavian and Sayyid Mohsen Naqvi. Sayyid Mohsen, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the show.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah, thanks for inviting.
You're welcome, and Brother Ali Alavian, assalamu alaikum, brother, and welcome to the show.
Wa alaykum assalam, thank you for having me here.
So today we want to talk about the important concept of adala, or justice, in the thoughts and the speeches of Ayatollah Khamenei. And we know that when founding the Islamic Revolution of Iran and the Islamic Republic of Iran, the late Imam Khomeini's main slogan, one of the main slogans, was establishing justice in the society. First of all, Sayyid Mohsen, let's talk about justice in terms of the, as established by Imam, by the late Imam Khomeini, Rahmatullah. What does he mean exactly by justice on that time?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. As we know that Imam Khomeini was an Islamic scholar, he meant justice as what has come in the Quran. Obviously, his main slogan was based on the Quranic teachings, and the revolution was an Islamic revolution. So therefore, when he is describing justice, or when he talks about justice, it is same as what obviously has come in the Quran and in the Islamic texts. In many places of the Quran, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, for example, اِعْدِلُوا وَرْإِقْسِطُوا. The word قِسْط and عَدْل, these both wordings are being used like in the Quranic text. Some of the scholars, they have come, they came with the, and they said like it's different in meaning.
That's right.
When they're used together.
Okay.
For example, like قِسْط is more refer towards a justice which is in monetary terms.
The transaction.
Transactional justice. Or economical, we can say.
Yes.
And when it is i'dilu or adl, it is more social or, you know, individual.
That's right.
Non-transactional,
yes,
aspect. So Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayhi, when he came up with the revolution, and he did that revolution, the main, we can say, objective was to bring justice amongst the people, which is in the Quran. The justice which Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam has brought in his time. Obviously, at that time, there were these issues as well.
That's right.
Now, when we go towards the definition of the justice, there are different definitions. The Supreme Leader also refers to two of those definitions. One is وَزْعُ كُلِّ شَيْءٍ بِمَوْضِعِ, means that putting everything in its place.
In its right, proper place.
In its right, proper place.
That's right.
There is another definition that you need to give haq to zi haq.
That's right.
The one who possessed the right, you need to give right to it.
Mm-hmm.
So these both definitions are used in the Islamic context, especially in the speeches of the Supreme Leader and Imam Khomeini, late Imam Khomeini.
Okay. Thank you, my Sayyid Mohsen. And let's, Brother Ali, get to you. Is your definition of justice and adala in the context of Islamic Republic of Iran the same as Sayyid Mohsen gave? Or you have a different definition, brother?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. May Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. Look, brother, justice and